Hi, listeners. Devin here. First, I hope you're all healthy, safe, and sane amid the COVID-19 pandemic. It's been a big adjustment for all of us as we try to stay safe and productive as we ride this out. To that end, Prashant and I recorded this podcast with Nathan Beckard, CEO of Founder Suite and host of How I Raised It podcast, all three of us from our own separate quarantines. We brought Nathan on to discuss his background working with entrepreneurs during both economic booms and busts, as well as how he views the current economic slowdown. Prashant and I give our perspectives as well, including how our portfolio companies have responded and discuss some reasons for guarded optimism. Hope you enjoy. Okay. Okay, so we now welcome on Nathan Beckard, CEO of Founder Suite and host of How I Raised It podcast. Nathan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to be here. And by here, I mean in our own separate work from home setups, but happy to have this conversation with you, Nathan, and Prashant as well.
Great.
Awesome. So, you know, I thought we could just start, if you want to give, you know, just a couple minutes of background, you know, maybe explain your career as an entrepreneur to this point, how you got interested in, you know, Founder Suite, some of these tools to help entrepreneurs raise, really just kind of fill in the backdrop for some of our listeners. That would be great.
Sure. So my career has been like very linear. I, out of college, I worked a little bit in investment banking during the first dot-com bubble. That was like my first job thrown into taking all these crazy companies public in the late 90s, and then witnessed the crash afterwards. But then I went out and hung out my own shingle, and we were working with companies going public and raising like later stage deals. Then after that, I went to grad school and then hung out my own shingle and started working with companies as kind of a fractional CFO or consultant. And basically it was, you know, working with them, helping them put together a target investor list, put together their model and their pitch deck and all this stuff. And for some of them, taking them around and helping them raise money. But I knew I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I'm like, in the back of my head, I'm like, I got to think of a good, fun idea I could launch with. And eventually I'm just like, why don't, and I think it was Marc Andreessen, you know, software eating the world speech, where I'm like, why don't I take some of the stuff we're doing? I'm building all these spreadsheets for startups to help track their investors and stuff like that. Why don't we turn that into product and make it a SaaS model? So that's what led to the launching of Founder Suite, which is now a collection of tools all for early stage companies to raise money, CRM, database, investor newsletter tools, pitch deck hosting, stuff like that. So that's been the journey so far, very kind of straight line, if you will.
Yeah. And so how about if you want to talk about the podcast, too? I mean, you know, we are still somewhat early on in our own podcast journey, but the fact that we got a vet here, I want to see how you got involved, you know, what the podcast focused us on, all that kind of backdrop.
Yeah. So we're still a very small team. We have a really lean, scrappy team. But one of our things, every kind of dawn of a new year, we say the three of us on the marketing team are each going to come up with some new experiment to try. And about, I guess, 2 years ago now, we said, I'm going to try a podcast. Why not? Seems like the thing to do. Everyone's doing one. And so we launched How I Raised It, which is literally just talking to funded founders and kind of unpacking how they raised their rounds, their most recent rounds. Some of it's seed rounds, some of it's Series A, but some of it's even later stage. We've had, you know, some later stage companies on there. And it's been great. I think we're about 150 episodes. And believe it or not, it's still like I'm learning fresh content of how people raise capital even after 150 episodes. And more recently, we've started also interviewing some like emerging venture funds. How did they raise their first fund? What's that process like? So we're kind of diversifying slightly, but it's just about fundraising. How do you do it?
Yeah, I mean, that's great. And as we'll jump into, I think that's going to become fortunately or unfortunately more and more relevant for a lot of these early stage companies here that are going to be raising, you know, in this somewhat trying market. So I think that that's a great product. And I imagine that there's going to be a lot of interest in what you have to say moving forward. So I'll just give some quick context on myself here. Our listeners know this, so I'll go quickly, but, you know, I can see a lot of similarities between your background and mine. My basic job here at Origin is to provide our portfolio companies with anything they might need as they move forward and try to grow their businesses. So, you know, it's the idea is once they raise the investment round, they add, you know, our partners to their board. They tend to institutionalize a bit more, and then, you know, they're really in a different phase of company development than they had been before. So, you know, we focus primarily Series A. So once they've raised the Series A capital, they're really off to the races, and they have to do things like operationalize and formalize, you know, a lot of their technological infrastructure pretty quickly. They got to get all their ducks in a row regarding legal stuff and, you know, some of the more tactical logistics that go into building a business, as well as stuff like adding headcount, right? And for the most part, you know, these are entrepreneurs who founded their own business. They grew it from a seed stage company. And now all of a sudden, you know, they're sort of in this different phase, as I mentioned, and the challenges really change. And so the idea is, you know, well, of course, the partners are, you know, primary counsel to these entrepreneurs. They're sitting on board meetings. They're talking consistently about high-level growth and financials. You know, the partners can't be everywhere at once. So the idea is Origin having somebody like me who's a bit more junior. I have, you know, the bandwidth and the capacity to really get deeper into these companies, understand with the entrepreneurs and CEOs what are their actual challenges, maybe go a layer deeper, talk to their VPs, the C-suite, see what challenges they're facing as they try to grow their business, and then provide resources that are going to be able to help them do that. So these resources could be industry data around, you know, growth benchmarks. It could be intros to talent. I have a marketing background, so I'll jump in and write a press release or write a job description. Really, the idea is anything that's slowing down growth of the company and that the CEO or their lieutenant say that they need help with. The idea is I want to be the first person they text or the first person they email.
Cool.
That is great. So that's me. And then Prashant, I'll kick it over to you. He's on our investment side. So I wanted to loop him in just to be able to talk more tactically about, you know, how rounds get put together and how venture firms think about it.
Yeah. Hi, Nathan. Good to meet you. Prashant here. I'm a vice president at Origin. Been with the firm for 3 years. And yeah, like Devin mentioned, do everything on the sourcing and diligence side, looking at deals, talking to entrepreneurs, and everything that comes with the diligence process, as well as supporting portfolio companies that I work with on some of the things that Devin mentioned. And, you know, Origin tries to roll up our sleeves and be supportive. Part of that is Devin and the entire platform that he has. And part of that is folks on the investment team and being on the board or in the boardrooms as observers as well. So nice to meet you and happy to talk about your journey and the entrepreneurs you've talked to, as well as the business you're building. And I know we have a list of topics here, so I'm looking forward to it.
Great.
All right. Awesome. So, you know, with that, sort of a harsh transition here, but these are harsh times we're in. So, you know, as we record this, I think, you know, we're still sort of seeing where the fallout is going to end from the coronavirus and the subsequent economic downturn. So, I mean, if you want to give a bit of context, Nathan, on your past in terms of growing businesses through tougher times, maybe through recessions, how you approach that, I think that'd be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an economist. I'm not an expert. I'm not a epidemiologist. But I have been around in the .com crash, active in the startup fundraising world, and in the 2008 financial crisis. And here we go again. So, you know, it's a little bit of it's different. Same, same, but different, as they say. This one is interesting because the other two, you had wildly inflated, you know, valuation bubbles. And we saw a little bit of that recently too. But like, you know, the economy was really healthy up until this virus hit in many ways, some asset inflation. But, you know, economically, the structure is different from those past two bubbles and collapses. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But I think, you know, kind of like on the day-to-day, and I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts too, for startups looking to raise money, there seems to be a pretty strong consensus that even though, you know, pretty much every VC says they're open for business, they're adjusting to the work at home, they're hunkering down, homeschooling the kids, trying to figure out how to triage their existing companies and keep them afloat. And so deal flow and deal activity is going to slow down you know, pretty dramatically. So I think that's one interesting thing. You know, all the other effects of that, like valuations are probably going to take a hit. I've seen one little, I'm trying to gather data on this, but I won't see one little quick survey saying, you know, median valuations are going to take a 25% haircut. And terms are probably going to get stiffer too. So slower funding environment, tougher terms, valuation hits. But I still have some optimistic, you know, reasons to think it's not a terrible time to be out talking to investors. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, Nathan, I think a lot of what you hit on is spot on. I think there's going to be a moment here for, you know, it has been the past few weeks and it will be for the foreseeable future, where I think uncertainty more than anything is kind of freezing people up, right? So VCs have a lot of dry powder. They raised big funds in 2018, 2019. Even at the beginning of this year, we saw a lot of capital get raised and committed. So it's not a question of capacity or the ability to deploy, but the questions I have are more around, you know, people are spending a lot of time on their existing portfolio companies and triaging, like you mentioned. So how much bandwidth do they have to look at new deals? The other is just general fear, like it's a scary time to be deploying capital and writing checks and sending wires. So is that something you want to be doing, especially when we don't know what the ultimate impact is going to be to a lot of the verticals or industries that companies we invest in might be selling to or partnering with? But I do think, you know, as people adjust to maybe a new normal with COVID-19, we will see some of that capital get deployed. I mean, there's just a settling that'll happen with people who are okay, you know, writing checks with people who they may not have met in person as much as they would have liked previously, and remote work. So I do think there's going to be some pressure on that capital to get deployed. In terms of terms and valuations, you know, one thing I heard from an LP is who's in LPing a lot of funds is, you know, when the public markets take a hit of 20%, 30%, 40%, when valuations get cut by 25%, like the GP or the VC may think, oh, this is a good deal, right? It's this valuation is 25% cheaper than it would have been last week. Well, a lot of your LPs are selling marketable securities to fund your capital call to do the investment. And if they're down 30 or 40% in the market, you know, 25% cut in the valuation isn't necessarily great if they're selling assets that just went down 30%. So that put it in perspective, I think, you know, for me at least, expectations around what's really a good valuation and what's bad, or is it just, well, that's normal for these times. So don't really think you're getting a deal on something. So, and I think that flows through into, you know, the growth speed that we will see, or trajectory. You know, companies before, you know, SaaS companies in particular could start up, you know, freemium models, bottoms up go to market. They could double, triple in the first couple of years pretty easily because it was a frothy market. People were spending. Now there's going to be a lot more scrutiny on budgets. It's going to be a lot harder to get more of a lot of those companies off the ground the way we were before. So I think you're going to see, you know, capital having to be more patient as well, which is, hey, we're not going to grow 300% 3 years in a row in these market conditions, that, you know, we have different expectations. So that'll be reflected a little bit in the valuations naturally. But Devin, I don't know if you have other stuff to add.
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it. And I mean, you know, it's again, at risk of sounding like a cliche here, I mean, you know, to say we're open for business maybe isn't tremendously new and helpful from what you're hearing out on the markets. But, you know, I will say, I think Prashant mentioned something early in his answer there that I think kind of bears repeating, which is, it's really the uncertainty, I think, right? It's the lack of knowledge as to how long, you know, the public market downturn is going to last, you know, how long the quarantines are going to last, how long some of the after effects that we're seeing ripple through the economy are going to last. I think it's more so that rather than, okay, you know, sure, everything fell 35%, but we think we've hit bottom, right? And then looking forward from there, again, to Prashant's point, investors and entrepreneurs and really the entire market can adjust to the new normal and can say, okay, we know what this looks like now. We know how to go forward, and we know how to grow profitable businesses. So, you know, I would say yes, right now in early April, there's a high amount of uncertainty. And, you know, I would say maybe in a month or so, even if the markets don't turn around, I don't think they will, at least maybe we'll have more certainty as to, you know, what some of the ripple effects of this might be.
Yeah. What do you think? Here, I'll throw this out to both of you. Like,
yeah,
you know, the uncertainty is, I agree, such a big factor driving everything or preventing things from driving forward, but almost like, I don't even know how to ask this. I mean, I guess you could take a resolution of coronavirus in sort of a quick resolution where maybe it burns off in the summer or something, or something that goes on for a long time. And we have to, you know, how much of it is a function of like how quickly either we flatten the curve on the spread or find a vaccine versus adjusting to new normal? I don't know if that question makes sense, but you know. Yeah.
No, I hear you. I mean, I think that would be one obviously macro level condition that might change, right? If we do think we've hit peak on, you know, the flattened curve or maybe the curve that hasn't been flattened so much, but understanding, okay, new diagnoses are no longer going up, I think that's a big milestone, right?
Yeah, and yeah.
Again, I mean, I'm certainly far from an expert even among the three of us, but I would say, you know, any kind of tangible external trigger like that, I think is going to go a long way into, you know, again, VCs and the rest of the market having a good understanding of, you know, okay, where's bottom? How can we start our way back?
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I do think, you know, we mentioned obviously some of the downsides here. Valuations can get cut. VCs may be more hesitant to invest in new companies. But, you know, I think you've taken an interesting perspective, Nathan, on what some of the potential upsides might be of this, right? There's certainly reasons to be optimistic. More silver linings, obviously, than genuine positive outcomes of the pandemic. But I mean, I would say if you can identify maybe some of those reasons for optimism, I think that might be enlightening here.
Yeah, I put together a blog post for our, we've got roughly 11,000 startups on our platform, about 2,000 actively fundraising. So I felt a couple of weeks ago that I needed to sort of put together something, right? And part of my reasons to be optimistic are, you know, the record amounts of capital that Prashant mentioned. Like I found some PitchBook data, you know, VCs are sitting on $189 billion in undeployed capital or dry powder, which is about 50% more than they had at the last downturn, 2008-2009. You know, so that's a lot of money. And of course, as you guys know, there was a timeline on that. They can't sit on that for a decade. You have to put it to work at some point. So that's exciting. I think, and I'd like to hear your either refutation or corroboration of this, but you know, there were several VCs who invested pretty aggressively in the last downturn, and some of those had pretty outsized returns. And I think that VCs sort of paid attention to that and are trying to learn from that, you know, or maybe adjusting behavior in this downturn. I don't know. And then I think, you know, just we're seeing more alternative sources of capital come in, right? Angel market is boomed. I mean, you can't make any money in the debt market as an investor. Interest rates are almost zero, and stock market's so volatile that I think you're seeing more angels kind of looking at the private markets, which have a longer timeline, as a place to park some money and find positive ROI. You've seen sovereign wealth funds open up offices in Silicon Valley. You've seen corporate VC open up offices in Silicon Valley and Chicago and elsewhere in the tech economy, you know, whether they stick around, because I remember they kind of retreated, corporate VC kind of retreated in the last downturn. So whether they stick around, TBD, but you've seen other sources of capital come in looking at startups. So I think that's interesting. So I don't know. You guys have any thoughts or follow on to that?
Yeah, no, sure. I'm happy to take that. Look, I think that what you mentioned about, you know, there's a lot of dry powder and that does need to be deployed, which is an exciting time for entrepreneurs. But it's also something that they shouldn't take for granted, right? I mean, I think that raising money is still going to be difficult. I mean, I don't think we are seeing mass pullbacks from limited partners who allocate to venture funds, but we have anecdotally heard some stories about folks who commit capital to venture funds, you know, changing their minds or pulling back on those commitments. So the 180 whatever billion you mentioned, well, you know, a lot of those investors made those commitments when the markets were at a certain level. Those markets are now at another level. Are they going to be able to meet those commitments? Are they going to be able to maintain them, or will they be exiting their position, so to speak? So I think that's one thing to keep in mind. The other is, you know, people tend to think about like the phases of venture and the phases of companies that have been started along these like paradigm shifts that line up kind of with computing paradigms, right? Like mobile taking off or cloud taking off or rewind all the way, right? And, you know, downturns obviously have created strong companies, but I think great companies have been created at all times. You know, maybe the entry points during downturns just tend to look better for those companies. So those returns are just outsized for everyone involved. But, you know, I do think that you're right that the macro effect of the dry powder being available for venture is going to be a good thing for entrepreneurs. But I do think that there's gaps that existed before the COVID crisis and will be exacerbated beyond, which you touched on a little bit, which is, you know, people who write first checks, angels, smaller kind of grants to early entrepreneurs, there's going to be a lot of downward pressure on that, right? I mean, when people are feeling the crunch in their own liquidity or in the public markets, they're not as willing to write $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 checks as angels. And that is going to put some stress on the number of companies that can start. I still think like the effect that we've seen in the last 5 or 7 years on the cost to start a company, especially with things like AWS and all the tools that you can just click a button and bundle and start up. I think it's going to be easy to start companies. The question is whether you'd be able to even get to the point where you're really venture institutional backable, which I'm sure is a topic that you've covered with your entrepreneurs on, whether it's your podcast or just in your business. Like preparing to be institutionally ready and being at that stage is very different than raising friends and family money.
Yeah. For sure.
I'd love to hear your perspective on that, Nathan, if you have sort of, you know, shifted how you guide some of your startups and some of the folks on the platform, you know, towards being, to quote Prashant, institutional ready. I mean, do you think that bar has raised now that we're in a downturn? Do you think that, you know, sort of everybody has been sort of knocked back to square one? Like, how do you approach that idea of getting startups to being, you know, ready for VC money?
I don't know if that bar has been firmed up yet. I think it's still moving all over the place, and I don't think we have a consensus. I'm actually trying to find and I've got one or two leads of guests for our show of startups that have raised just in the last like couple days, you know, to kind of talk about that, like where is that bar, right?
Yeah,
I did one 2 days ago, and the guy had mostly closed it out before the virus hit the U.S. So that doesn't really count.
So at the risk of putting too fine a point on it, right? And Prashant mentioned this. Maybe this has something to do with where the initial valuation was. But coming out of the last, you know, real large scale downturn, you know, just after 2008, you did see companies start to pop up and, you know, be founded and raise their first round of institutional capital. Companies like Uber and Instagram and Pinterest and Slack, like these sort of big heavy hitting names that, you know, now we think of as wildly successful companies. A lot of these came out of, you know, a time when the market was in flux and, you know, in a downturn.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think, we could go on an entire separate show about all the advantages of being in this kind of downturn, right? I remember, especially in the first dot-com bubble, but also in the 2008, like trying to find an office space was almost impossible, right? And engineers are all vacuumed up the moment they put the word engineer on their LinkedIn profile or GitHub or whatever, right? Like it was impossible to hire. It was impossible to get an office space. And of course that's all going to change a little bit. I think it's going to be, and that's one reason why you did see Airbnb and GitHub, Cloudflare, Pinterest, like all these great companies come out of the last downturn is they were able to scoop up good talent at reasonable prices, you know? So, that's another silver lining, if you will, to, to this new market. If you've got a good vision, and ideally are able to either bootstrap or raise some funding, I mean, you know, you can really do a lot, whereas you're not competing with so many other overfunded or heavily funded companies. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nathan, what are you seeing on the ground or some of the entrepreneurs that you're talking to around kind of trimming costs or laying off staff potentially, or how are people adjusting to the new environment? And what are you seeing on kind of both sides of the spectrum, the extreme side, and then maybe the less extreme or aggressive side?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's sort of industry specific. I've one firm, I won't name names, but it's in the travel. It's a software for travel, and I got their investor update or their monthly update just a couple days ago, and their revenue has just plummeted, and they've laid off something like 40% of their staff already. Now, other more just generic or general business B2B software players I'm talking to are actually still holding on, not making any staffing cuts yet. Kind of, again, watching and waiting for more data points or signals. So I think outside of those really hard hit industries, just from my, you know, little perspective, people are still trying to not to make too many cuts yet. I think people are trimming budgets in, you know, Facebook ads and some other kind of discretionary marketing spend. But yeah, it's kind of industry specific. I'm not seeing people slash and burn quite yet, for the most part. That could change.
Yeah. I mean, again, also, you know, relatively small sample size, at least in our portfolio, but that lines up well with what we've seen and, you know, our guidance to most of our companies. Which is, you know, maybe think about how to get leaner, think about, you know, some opportunities to maybe, you know, if they can take some capital now, especially when the uncertainty is so high, you know, kind of bolster things now, for the coming winter. I think things like that are a good idea, but again, by and large, you know, we at least haven't seen companies, you know, have to kind of, really, you know, heavily hit the workforce and really be aggressive about driving costs down.
Yeah.
And just to add to what, you know, Devin has said, obviously there's stuff going on at the federal level with respect to trying to help out small businesses that could have implications for venture backed companies. It's still unclear the extent to which that will be true or what's accessible. But I think generally, you know, the framework we've used with our companies and the calls that I've had in the last 3 or 4 weeks and emails and texts is, you know, the old plan needs to be thrown out the window. You need a new plan. Err on the side of more runway versus less, because we should assume that capital markets are going to be hard to access. And even if they aren't, it's a better idea to be conservative right now and then be surprised versus plan to run hot and then run out of money. We've also, you know, urged our companies that had any kind of facilities, credit facilities or lines of credit in place or revolvers to kind of access those as aggressively as possible. And we've also implemented kind of flash reporting across the portfolio because, you know, we want to understand what are hotspots for our companies and where do we need to kind of parachute in with either capital or expertise or whatever the case may be. And that has really helped figure out like who's doing okay, who's maybe benefiting and where are the places we need to focus our efforts. And then just kind of setting new budgets and baselines of like slower, you know, slower growth, slower spend, reduce expenses where possible, and defer as many costs and hires as possible. In addition to like basic things like work from home, hygiene, and best practices. So it has been a really interesting kind of month where people have reoriented their entire personal and professional lives. So it's kind of interesting science experience from that perspective. But it has been a challenging and new period, I think, for a lot of VCs, not all, but for a lot of VCs and for a lot of entrepreneurs, maybe all.
Yeah, it's interesting. In addition to the cost cutting, I'm seeing some kind of chatter, just anecdotally, like I'm a member of this SaaS startups group on Facebook, and people are chattering there about, you know, how do we work with customers to keep them on instead of churning, right? Like, do we discount our software for X number of months? Do we defer payments? Do we let them go on free for a while? I noticed even like Stripe has a new button where you can like pause a subscription, right? So it's kind of an adaptation to this new, you know, new economics. How do we kind of, maybe we don't squeeze $100 a month out of this customer, but can we still get $50 for a period of time? We're even doing that a little bit on Founder Street because, of course, we're vulnerable to startups that are freezing up and worried.
Of course,
yeah. Working with a few clients to, I have a COVID discount, not to try to exploit this, but.
Right. No, of course.
Yeah. So I think that's interesting. I'd love to hear, and we can skip this question, but do you guys counsel your portfolio on this CARES Act and how to take advantage of it? I'm still trying to get my head around it, so I can't comment too much on it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know me personally and Prashant and really, you know, our whole firm over the last week have really taken deep dives into this new legislation and, you know, if it will be able to help our companies and if so, how. So, you know, it's currently, and this may not age well because I think we're going to get an answer on this fairly soon, but there's a question as to whether some of this government relief funding can actually go to any startups at all that are anchored by some equity investors. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's questions around that, which is due to the affiliation rule, which I won't get into here. And then, you know, it's saying, okay, well, with that huge caveat that we may not be eligible, with that aside, you know, what are the programs that are going to be most impactful? What are going to be the easiest to apply to? You know, which ones are loans and what interest rates versus which ones can become grants because there's both in the mix? You know, what are some shorter term solutions the government is offering, like deferring payment of Social Security payroll tax? Like, there's really all these different levers. And, you know, the U.S. government seems like they're, you know, ready and willing to pull them, at least for small businesses. So, we've really spent a long time developing, you know, a primer around the CARES Act that I've been sending to our CEOs over the last couple of days, basically saying, hey, you know, here's as quick hitting as I can make it. Here's what you're going to need to know. Here are the applications. Here's when they'll be available to actually submit. Here's who you might want to talk to. So it's been a lot of stuff that if you had told me a month ago, I was going to be really deep actually reading the legislation and, you know, reading some of these bills. I don't know if I would have believed you, but it's been a larger piece of certainly my role. And I think, you know, again, across the firm for the last week.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. You have anything to add there, Prashant?
No, I don't. I mean, I think Devin's done a great job with that for our portfolio. And there's obviously information flying at everybody 100 miles an hour from 15 directions. And it's still unclear. I think what's going to be the case when the dust settles. The one thing I'd add is, you know, I think the CARES Act and this stuff is really important, and local jurisdictions may be doing things to help as well. And payroll tax deferral is obviously helpful. But, you know, ultimately, these companies that survive this period are going to need more than just, you know, a couple of months of payroll covered by the government and a forgivable loan. I think people do need to rethink their business model. You know, you mentioned, Nathan, that company in the software for travel space, like, they need to rethink their business model. Like, yes, focusing on getting 2.5 months of cost paid for, that's great, but that's not going to make or break the success of your startup, right? Yeah. It's going to give you more runway to do what you need to do and pivot. So what I'm trying to coach folks, in addition to, like, obviously maximize your ability to get assistance, but stay focused on the most important thing, which is you have to run your business and make it sustainable for the new, what may be permanent reality with COVID and the macro shifts we might see around remote work and around less travel and around people not being as willing to go out in big, you know, big crowds or large events or bars and restaurants. Like, there's I think a lot of things that are going to come out of this that will reset back to normal and some things that'll be a little different. And I think a lot of companies right in that seam of like, what just changed enough because of COVID for the permanent, what can create a lot of amazing companies. And I think you might see an emergence of a couple of winners there. But it's obviously still early days. We don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, our entrepreneurs and CEOs are doing a lot right now, and we don't want them to get too kind of tunnel visioned around the CARES Act or something else.
Yeah. Good.
Great. So, you know, in the interest of time here, I think we should probably wrap this up. If there's anything else either one of you would like to bring up, sort of any last kind of quick 1 minute, 2 minute things here, now'd be a good time.
I have one thing. I'll just kind of tell, because I am talking to a lot of our customers and sometimes talking to them off a ledge. but the thing I'm telling a lot of our startup founders who are, you know, figuring out, should I be raising money or not right now? I tell them two things. You know, you can't change this macro environment. It's not something in your control. You can't change how this virus populates or not, other than staying home, of course. What you can change, you know, what can you do then to take action? You can work on your funnel, increasing that target investor list if you're thinking about or wanting to raise money. And I'm telling our founders, like, maybe you had a 50 names on there or 100 names on there before, you know, dial that up 50 to 100%. So your top of the funnel is larger. And then spend this time, you know, all these investors are sort of stuck at home. You have a captive audience. Spend this time now to initiate and like nurture those relationships now, right? So that when things do thaw, whether it's 2 months from now, 6 months from now, 8 months, you know, 12 months from now, you'll have built that relationship, hopefully a track record with some of these investor prospects, so that you'll be in a really good position to raise money when the market kind of opens up again. So those are my parting thoughts.
Yeah, I think that's good guidance. And I think we've had a lot of good ideas here on this podcast. So I appreciate the time from both you, Nathan, as well as you, Prashant. And yeah, be safe and stay well.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Devin. Thanks, Nathan.